Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poole. My guest today is Green Party candidate for mayor, Dan Platt. And Dan is here to talk about the state of his campaign as well as his thoughts on unrezoned Albany. So, Dan, how's it going?
It's good.
Okay. Can you explain how good it is?
Yeah, sure. So I've started canvassing, mostly hitting around Center Square, going neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block, and I am knocking on all the doors. And I'm surprised certain days how many people are actually home. Conventional wisdom would say it's not worth hitting every door, but I am not getting a lot of negative feedback. A lot of people are interested or at least curious, and that is good. Curiosity leads to further participation. And that is what I'm seeking.
When you say they're interested, how do they express that?
Usually with I'll read this, I'll check it out. When it's a conversation, I explain the ideas. There's certainly a nodding happening, like, oh, yeah, lower taxes by switching to land taxes. I can get that. Understanding the policies, worker-owned stuff. And that can get people's imagination going, and that's what I'm seeking to do. Expand the possibilities that Albany voters have on the ballot and in the landscape of their mind as to where we can go as a city.
Now, you were born and raised in Albany, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What year were you born?
1988.
So when you were born, Whaling was mayor?
I suppose. Didn't
right?
really matter to me.
Okay.
My perception is that as long as I was alive, Jennings was mayor.
Okay.
From the time when old enough to be aware of such a thing as a mayor, to college, Jennings was mayor. So I would joke that, current mayor has been mayor my whole life. It's the only mayor I've known.
Right.
Till now, of course.
So, Carney was mayor for 40 years, and during those 40 years, he ruled the city with an iron grip. And I think a lot of the problems that are going on in Albany stem from the fact that he made people complacent. So do you find that in the course of your campaigning that people are complacent and they're happy with the status quo?
Yeah, there's definitely an ideology centered around order, consistency, tradition. And there are places for that in the political landscape. But it must be balanced with the need for change, for dynamic, for dynamism, for the ebb and flow of people's tastes and how people change over time. This is how nature works. To look for the stable order that lasts generations, like the one-party rule that we have, is particularly unnatural. It's certainly unecological and unsustainable. And shows up in having one-party rule, and eventually the city's finances are in a terrible shape because there hasn't been a diversity of people that have been looking at the numbers and running them and dealing with them. And we can solve that instead of, either you change who's doing it every term or you open it up to more people consistently. So you can have that consistency, the consistency of more direct democracy. And to respond to any criticism or doubts or skepticism of that, people aren't, either the response is that people aren't ready for actual democracy or worse, people can't do direct democracy. And I'm not going to respond to the people who say can't, but for the people who say people aren't ready, it's a nice idea, but, you know, it doesn't have to happen all at once. We can start with referendums. Surely people of Albany can come out on a Sunday to vote for a referendum if we have a voting day on a weekend day, and then we can vote, put the referendum more often, things like rezoning, things like taxes. Just like with library budgets and school budgets. And unfortunately, you know, when you vote for a budget, you're voting for all of it. So even if you just disagree with one part of it, this will come up later with reason. If you just don't just like one part of it or you want something in it, you have to vote. You kind of have to vote for the greater good. And that is something that should not have to be the case. And that's why you need that participatory process, too. But we could start at least with referendums, like with the budgets.
Now, you're a young guy, and you know, you have an architectural degree. Do you find that there are a lot of young people interested in making change within the political structure, or how do they feel about it?
There are. What the issue here is, are there organizations from which to channel their desires into to act? Is it going to, are there organizations to their tastes? A lot of them are just figuring out what their tastes are, or what kind of actions they want to do, and a lot of them haven't thought about it, or they're just starting to think about it now. So there needs to be a diversity of organizations, but for the most part, they all need to be like the Green Party in that we're going to go in a direction that we have not gone before. We're not going to repeat the same kinds of rhetoric and policies. Even New Deal, we're going to go beyond the New Deal. That's why the Green Party has the Green New Deal. We're trying to differentiate that it is more bottom-up. It is more about meeting people's material needs for the long haul. So people are interested. They just need conduits. And I'm hoping that the Green Party can be one of them. And there is some indications of that.
More and more people are beginning to realize that the two-party system does not serve the needs of the average person. And yet there's the Green Party, there's, you know, a few third parties out there that are addressing the issues.
I want to mention your audio is kind of weird right now. Are you close
okay.
to the phone?
Is this better?
No.
It's not better. Okay, hold
All
on.
All right, but I can understand you. We're going.
Okay, so if people are beginning to realize that the two parties, the major two parties, does not represent the needs of the people, how come they're not flocking to third parties or becoming involved in creating organizations that would serve their needs?
This is an issue I'm swamped in, and the simplest way I can put it is look to groups like Justice Democrats, Draft Burning for a New Party, I guess, any of the groups that want to rebuild the Democratic Party. Now, for background, since the 80s, or since Clinton, the Democrats have not been a working people's party. Wall Street has had two parties, right? When it comes to finance, banking, war, the two parties are a lockstep. Only on, say, identity politics issues, as they're called, and social issues are there differences, but even when there are, there is kind of a melding together. And especially when it comes to actually fighting for people, and that's coming forward. Single-payer health care has a growing majority of support in a poll I saw from one institution, or, you know, I think it was a news outlet, half of Republicans, right, the poor half, support single payer. And that's, but that is not seen in our representation because they don't represent. So, I think there's a, when I ask such progressives who are working within the Democratic Party, their usual reason is to say that there's already an infrastructure with the Democrats. The voter base is there. It's just a matter of reaching out to them and changing the Democrats first and then the rest of the country. What they are missing to me is that there is the Democrats, which are registered Democrats are a third of the voter base. Then Republicans are another third. And then the other third is independent and completely unaffiliated third. And they are left out. They have no party. And they don't distribute themselves between third parties because we don't have a national infrastructure in which we have a slate everywhere at all times. Now, one of the components of me running for mayor is to make sure that there is a choice, that there is a presence and an existence that, yes, the Green Party is here. We want to upset, disrupt the one-party rule of Albany, the one-party rule that has that makes us have more in common with North Korea as far as people being completely complacent, as you put it, sometimes even subservient to the interests of fewer, or at least the interest to the machine, how things work. And that is not a good way to be.
It seems as though in Albany, the Republican Party is non-existent. The Democratic Party is falling apart. Who represents the people of Albany?
Advocate groups are the closest. And I would say the Green Party is second as far as their activities and how much pull they have. And that's kind of manifested in the fact that one of the recent changes to the rezone in the last month, last-minute edits, is that there's inclusionary zoning in it now. It's a very soft, kind of safe form of it. It's hard to know how effective it would be, but it's at least a token. It's in there. And that's because of the pushing of the advocate group, Housing for All, which I have attended many of their meetings. And I'm considered part of the membership, but I haven't been active in the last year. And they're a good group of people. There are disagreements in strategy and goals to have, but otherwise advocate groups that may not be nonprofits yet, and that's important, will actually lobby city government and particularly get with pressure because if it's a big enough issue, they will get something. Not substantial reform in my view because but that's a disagreement. I don't think the reforms that you get are good enough. And that's why a citywide campaign like mine where we can talk about issues like taxes and the transformative reforms and transforming our economy from the bottom up is extremely important and needed.
You ran for county executive a couple of years ago. Because of your campaign, have you seen any structural changes in the county that you could say, this is because of what of the issues that I raised?
No, because that campaign was mostly directed at progressives themselves and kind of rousing their interest in breaking away. Again, just to say there is another option. We may not have the candidate pool yet. We're still building our resources, and that is something we've been doing the last 2 years to good effect, and we have made progress on that. We now have a good affinity group, an actual organization, which we did not have 2 years ago. And that could in part be by my campaign, but I have no data to back that up, so I'm not going to make such a claim. But in the grand scheme of things, everything's connected. So why not?
Okay, so how many people right now, you're running for mayor on the Green Party line. How many candidates do you have running for Cameron Council?
We don't at this moment. There are some council candidates that I feel we affiliate with and work with. As to at the moment, but we haven't worked anything out. But certainly, I've been friendly with Al Toma of the 10th, I think.
So let's say you won for mayor and there were no Cameron Council members on your line. Do you think you could get legislation through? Or would they be...
Well, I think as it is, the mayor doesn't put forward legislation, correct? But certainly there would be issues I would be rousing about and doing tours and education and using the bully pulpit. But yes, there would be a number of things that I would put forward. But I would only do so once I gain the popular support and get people calling their council members. So working with council members, that's not too difficult. But it's working with the grassroots first. That's how things are actually done. When it comes to actually getting anything done in Albany, there has to be grassroots support in the first place. If there isn't a large swell of support, even 50 people coming into City Hall and saying, I want this, or I didn't like this, that has an effect. People making phone calls has an effect on the local level. Because unlike the national level, where a lot of reformers and such are putting their attention, Progressive Action Network and whatnot, they're putting their attention on the national level, on the state level, which is odd because the very same arguments they make of the Green Party, that we don't have a big resource base. I'm not sure what kind of base they have. But perhaps it is much larger. They're working off of the momentum of the Bernie Sanders campaign. So, and there is a lot more interest as far as that goes. But locally, there is not as much, bribery, big campaign donations to council members, let's say. The mayor, different story, but council members are relatively clean. They're just extremely risk-averse people. So they will not do anything unless there is pressure to do something. And then they will speak, and then they'll say things in public. I'll leave it there.
So that was my next question. It seems as though whatever issues are being decided by the city council, and there's a groundswell of people who come to the meetings and voice their opposition to whatever piece of legislation it is. For the most part, the Common Council votes against the interests of the citizens of the city. So why
that's
have
because
elections?
They're voting with the interests of the status quo. And you can start that by changing who the mayor is, changing exactly what the status quo is. And that is something very important to do.
It is important. And, you've stepped up to the plate, a few times to run. And I think the problem today is that people don't take the initiative to run for office. And if people aren't going to run for office and change the system, things are going to remain the same now until the end of time. How do you change that?
By making this look easy, and it is easier than it looks. Or rather, by having the campaign, it is a place to train, to practice doing doors, to practice going out in public and learning the skills, the meta skills of leadership, the meta skills of social interaction that so many don't have, the skills of organizing. And this is something that is not taught in schools. This is something that, in fact, is discouraged. And whenever students attempt to do it, to unionize, to have a student union, you know, there's a lot of opposition to it from the top. Why? Well, authoritarian attitudes reign in city government and school districts, and that needs to change. And I think there are some inklings of that, you know, here and there. But otherwise, there does need to be the actual actions by rank and file, as they're called, people, by people in neighborhoods. And they need to be asked to take, you know, if it's a matter of responsibility you want from other people, you need to talk to your neighbors too. You can't just put it all in the hands of a central authority and expect anything to change, because it won't. And that is the primary message of my campaign. To not put responsibility in one person.
You know, what you're saying is terrific, and people should engage in that kind of activity. But when somebody steps up to the plate and the mainstream media disregards them, and, you know, I do my best to get issues out, but for the most part, the mainstream media is in bed with the special interests at whatever level you're talking about. So how do you overcome that?
Well, I've outlined that in my other answers. You need infrastructure. We need our own media. We need our own institutions. We need to outcompete the status quo. And that doesn't. That starts by doing oppositional things. So there's campaigns for the status quo. We need opposition campaigns, political campaigns to the status quo. We need oppositional media to the status quo under community control, oppositional businesses to the status quo, not following the regular business models. And that would be worker-owned enterprises. That would be worker-directed things, land trusts, the kinds of things I would be pushing for as mayor to have more of, public financing, alternatives to private banking, and so on. We need all those things. And it starts with individual acts. It starts with organizing and learning how to do it. And that's something you need to talk to people about. So this campaign is about going out and talking to people about collective work to and how to do it. And particularly, you know, usually the impediments are lack of resources and a lack of time. And these are things that City Hall can help with by distributing the budget in a more decentralized manner, we're going to give the neighborhoods money for their own infrastructure projects. I've talked to people. One man in particular said he would be willing for higher taxes if it meant more investment in his neighborhood. People are willing. It's just a matter of polling and finding and doing the actual work and the data collection that certain techs say they're so for. They want to be scientific, and yet they collect no data. So it's extremely frustrating to say that they're going to be data-based and we're going to move forward and be progressive, and it's not manifested. It's still just them and in a room with 10, maybe a growing number of people around a table, but it's still just one table in a room of experts or advocates. People who are then supposed to be experts on the public will and what people are really feeling. But that is rarely the case.
We come from different generations. I grew up during the Vietnam War, and there were many demonstrations. Young people took to the streets, and, you know, Nixon kind of got all bent out of shape over it. And now, whatever is thrown at the citizenry, no matter how repressive, how oppressive. People just accept it and really don't speak up. Why is that?
I think that's a false assumption. There's bigger and more protests than ever. Since when we really, I think one of the kind of sea changes was that we had, the Obama administration was in fact very conservative. So this kind of opened a lot of people's eyes, like my own, that both parties are conservative parties. We have no progressive party. And thus, I looked into alternatives, political alternatives, looking into other institutions, finding none, they had to be created. And that's kind of what Occupy was about, part of what Occupy was, creation of new institutions, temporary one because of state repression, but otherwise existing, real. Then I went to the Green Party for that because it was something real and unrepressed for the most part. And so look at the March for Women. Look at the March for Science, the largest marches and coming outs of people opposing our current administration, our current government. Now, it could be focused all on one man, Trump, but it's also a general dissatisfaction and the delegitimacy of our government because of our fraudulent election system that's unfair, rigged, and so on. Because our economy is rigged, because of how top-down and controlled and so on, and bureaucratic. People are tired of these things. It wears them down. And where people being worn down also means they're less apt to take action because they don't have the energy. But when it's the right day, then they will come out and express it. And they are expressing it. Organizations are starting to loosen up. And that's what the Science March is kind of lesson is, not lesson. The thing to take away is that there were way more organizations willing to say, yes, we want you to march to their membership. Because there are a lot of people that will only act when they get permission. And that's a shame. But at least more organizations are loosening up. And once there's a little bit of wiggle room, people can start actually feeling themselves and going, yeah, this feels good. And, you know, I want to do more. And when they don't get more, well, that's when things can get interesting.
Now, on Monday, there's going to be the vote for Rezone Albany. And it got out of committee the other day, and it will be up for a full vote on Monday. Do you think there's been enough discussion on Rezone Albany that the people can be satisfied with?
Personally, this is kind of an example of why legislation needs to be itemized. It's why passing things as a package before it's all implemented is kind of bad, because then things like the rezoning of Sandridge Way kind of gets rided in, which has been a 3-year fight where residents there, not too many, but about 11 or so households, were completely ignored by the city government and other advocates even. I mean, some advocates would come to their side. It would be a matter of it's a tale of the little guy versus SUNY Poly, the big guy, and they've essentially, it looks like they've lost. And that's a shame, and it's something to learn from. But they're losing because after 3 years of keeping SUNY Poly at bay, the zoning they need to start their project is being kind of, not so much snuck in, but it's included in the rezone. And I want to point out, so like one of the charges of the rezone ordinance, the entire reform, is to stabilize neighborhoods, but also plan for the areas that are expected to grow and deal with non-conformities, like making sure that all of the properties actually conform to what the law says, which kind of speaks to that laws should have a sunset clause. I've looked at a book that kind of explains that laws should have an expiration date so that we're not living with either mistakes or the rules of the past generation. Some of the issues of the rezone is that density is not the same as high rises. You can have more density without having more floors if you pack buildings closer together, and that's a matter of the regs that I'm not sure wasn't really dealt with. Let's see, I wrote bottom line here. Yeah, bottom line is that, you know, this should be up for referendum. Thus, it should be like a year education process. The Chris Spencer of the Planning Department kind of spoke to all the neighborhood assembly associations, I think, as many groups as they exist. And that's and for public participation in the kind of democracy that I am talking about, we need more organization, places where people can, whether it's someone proposing legislation, someone fighting for it, for some change, to go to, places to go to. And right now there aren't many places to go to. There's advocates, there's nonprofits, there's certain large businesses to go to, but they're not representative enough, or they're not representative at all. Let's see. So, and there's kind of, and I'd also put forward that, you know, there's a tension between a centralized planning or a centralized set of rules, which is what the zoning code is about, versus a decentralized planning where you kind of don't worry about micromanaging everything, but allowing neighborhoods to have their own set of rules. And in order for them to do that, they do need the kind of resources that were allocated to certain parts of the city that are expected to grow, and but weren't allocated to the sections of the city which, like Pine Bush area, like the outer neighborhoods, where they're having the problems with the rezoned. They're the ones that are adversely affected, though there is language also added or changed in the rezone, because I looked at the actual edits. It's only pages of them. And one of them was changed from a minimized harm to ensure no threat to adjacent properties or the neighborhood, which is interesting. It's a little stronger, it's broader, it's you can sue, you know, this is a threat to, you know, me, versus what a lot of companies can say, that, oh yeah, that they can say they're minimizing damage even if they're not really doing a lot. You know, the fracking industry says, oh yeah, we minimize damage as much as we can. We're not polluting as much as we could. But it's not good. And then the same goes for urban development, where they say they minimize damage or they minimize harms, but there's a lot to be desired there. So not threatening adjacent properties is certainly better language. But that's just one thing I picked out. The major thing was the inclusionary zoning. And it's 5%, like 5%. So anyone developing anything more than 200 units, 5% of it has to be affordable to those of median income, which is 42,000 in Albany. So usually inclusionary zoning would have something like 50% of median income or 80% of median income. You know, the lower that percentage is, the more affordable it is for working people on minimum wage. So it's kind of a kind of one thing or the other. Either you do put in regulations and subsidies or whatnot for social housing that lowers rents, or you raise the local minimum wage. And of course, you should strive to do both. Then people actually have real wealth, and then they'll have time and energy for the real democracy. So it's sometimes a matter of what you do first. Economic security is certainly probably actually step one, and then actual democratic governance is then step two. They kind of also kind of go together. For actual economic security, there needs to be economic democracy. So it's a matter of doing both at the same time.
Okay, then. Our conversation will continue as the election or campaign evolves. So My final question to you is, if somebody wants to become involved in your campaign as a volunteer or send you money, how could they reach you?
So I'm on various social media accounts. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And that's Dan Platt with two A's, Green Man. And the website, which is not live yet but will exist, it will also be danplattgreenmayor.org.
Terrific. So we'll talk again, Dan. Thanks for being on Focus on Albany. You've been listening to Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. And I want everybody to be aware, starting in a couple of weeks on Monday mornings from 6 to 10, I will be on the air on WCAA 107.3. I will be your morning host. So if you're not familiar with WCAA and you live in the Albany area, tune in to 107.3. And in a couple of weeks, I will be the morning host. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.